All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome today. It's exciting to see so many faces here. I'm going to go ahead and get us through our housekeeping items so that I can turn it over to Ramesh and get us started with today. So as everyone knows, we start off each of our meetings by just taking a moment to reflect on how we approach this community, and that we are looking at everyone as who's a part of this community as someone who has positive intent, and we do follow the W3C code of conduct, and that is in the agenda if you would like to review it. Welcome everyone who is here, and we're very excited to have you. And if you are not an official member of the CCG, then that's great. You're welcome to join in these calls at any point and participate in the larger community. If you feel like you want to dive into the work a little bit more, be a contributor, then I would ask you to go ahead and use the links in the agenda to create an account with W3C and actually join the community group. It is there is no cost for individual members, and so feel free to go ahead and do that. The more voices that we have in this community, the better. We also keep an ongoing minutes of these meetings and a transcript and a video call. I think the most important piece of that is so that as members, we have the opportunity to be able to go back and review pieces of information that are important to what we're interested in. I know it has happened for me that a session wasn't necessarily pertinent at the time that it came, but then later down the road, I was like, oh, I actually need to really understand that. And so having that archive is enormously helpful. And then also just to make sure that we keep a record of what happens in these meetings and the things that we discuss. Obviously, as we continue to have more and more membership, and this becomes larger and larger community, having a record of how this community is evolving is important. And I think now that I'm through sort of the spiel portion, I'd like to ask for the opportunity for anyone who is new to this community or just has an update to this community to put themselves on the queue, which actually is the other thing I didn't mention, is that that's how we manage these meetings. So if you are interested in introducing yourself or sharing an update, then I would ask you to put Q+ into the queue so that you can we can call on you and recognize you. Manu.
Hey, Kimberly. Hey, everyone. Just some good news. The verifiable credentials data model version 2.0 is now in the candidate recommendation phase at W3C. So apologies. This happened last week. There's the news announcement from the W3C. What this means is that the working group believes that they're done with version 2.0, and they're asking people, implementers out there, to start implementing the specification. So feature freeze happened a while ago. Now we're saying we really think we're done. We will probably keep the door open for the next maybe 3 to 5 months. And once we have enough implementers implementing, saying that they feel comfortable with the specification, we will wrap it up, call it a global standard, and put it out for the final vote at the World Wide Web Consortium. So that's where all 450 plus companies say whether they like it or they still think it needs work. So this is a big milestone. This basically means that, you know, the past 18 months of work, we're done. There have been, if I remember off the top of my head, 280 changes to the specification. So a lot of people didn't, you know, while we're working on it, it feels like we're like making no progress. But when you look back to the last 18 months of work, it's resulted in a lot of updates and clarifications to the specification. So it's out there now. feel free to start implementing. I know that a number of vendors are already starting to integrate the VC2O data model into their production roadmap plans for the summer. That's it. Good news. And thank you everyone in the community that contributed to it and got it to this stage.
Thank you, Manu. That is an enormous amount, volume of work that's been completed. So congratulations to everyone. Anyone else with an introduction or reintroduction? All right. How about announcements and reminders? Anything coming up that you want to make sure the community is aware of? You can add yourself to the queue with Q+. Will.
Yeah, I'll just flag that. I'm still thinking about how we iterate on our roadmap. Just to flag that, something I'm working on, and I did think about using Mermaid. I think Manu, maybe you suggested that. I have an example. I think Mermaid is possible. I took it on our repo, but I think the next step really is like, what do we want to put on there and how do we want it to work? So that's kind of where I'm at. Just an update, really.
That's great. Thank you. Please check that out and provide some input. Manu?
Yeah, Will, one, thank you for working on that. In the preview looks great. I think that's going to be way easier to manage, using Mermaid. I still owe you that list of, from the last roadmap. I haven't forgotten. It's just buried deep on my work queue. So please feel free to, pester me until I get that list to you, if that would be helpful to you.
Great. Thanks.
Any other announcements and or reminders or questions about work items? Kalia.
As always, we've got IW coming up in April in Mountain View, California. Should be great. I think very soon the registration for our regional event in Europe will open up, the Digital Identity on Conference Europe, which is the third week of June. And it looks like the South African event will be happening the third week of September, which unfortunately conflicts with TPAC, but that's the way it goes with venues and availability. So I'll put a link to IW in the chat.
Great. Thank you. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get Ramesh started. First of all, if you weren't here at the very beginning of the call, it is very late for him. We're very appreciative of him taking the time to come and join us to talk about modular open source identity platform. And so welcome, Ramesh, and go ahead and the floor is yours.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to present MOSIP. To you all, and as per the sage advice of Harrison, I'll turn my video off and I start my screen share so that things will be easier. I just wanted to make sure that most of you may not have met me. I just wanted you to be able to put a face to my name and voice. Let me start sharing. I hope you are able to see my screen.
Yes, we see it.
Okay, thank you. So I'll try to keep this brief, maybe up to 20 minutes, and then we could probably get into questions after that.
That sounds great. Thank you.
MOSIP was incubated at the IIIT Bangalore University, and it's supported by grants from various philanthropic agencies, including the ones listed here. We started in 2018, and we remain a not-for-profit and not-for-revenue project till date. We have been adopted in four countries so far, which have gone live, and there have been several pilots that are that have been run, and two more countries are in the process of taking their identity systems live using the platform that we have built. As of date, we have 100 million plus people who have been issued IDs using our platform. This has happened over the last 3+ years through the pandemic. And after that, there's been plenty of interest as digital systems gain more traction. I think the pandemic has accelerated the demand, and we are also feeling the same. What we basically do at MOSIP is we build underlying platforms in the open source for people to create their systems on and run. ID systems have been our focus. And apart from providing the platform, we also help countries with the actual adoption by way of training their people, building capacity, supporting them with issues in the platform, and so on. We have close to 80+ partners who have been working with us for the last few years. It grew from an initial set of a handful to this number over the years. And this consists of different kinds of partners, people who understand our platforms deeply, people who offer biometric components, people who offer integration services, and so on. We also work with several universities and non-governmental organizations for research and collaborations in technology as well as non-technology areas in terms of inclusion, bias recognition and management, and so on. So this is to keep ourselves sharp and in line with expectations and emerging trends also. Largely our learnings happen from the deployments that we do and from the trends that are happening in the industry. Over the last few years, we have actually built several solutions. We started off with an identity issuance and lifecycle management system, which is what MOSIP was, the modular open source identity platform. It included identity verification capabilities also in it. This is where we started with. This was the intent behind this was to be able to issue IDs for people who don't have IDs. So several countries had poor coverage and they were looking for systems that could be used, and this was positioned for those countries. Our initial adoption has been primarily in Africa and parts of Asia. We have Morocco, Togo and Ethiopia in Africa, and the Philippines in Asia, who have gone live with the system. So they have been using the MOSIP platform for this. And in the last couple of years, we have started adding additional capabilities to start unlocking the value of having an identity. So on top of this foundational or real identity that we have been issuing, we wanted to create digital authentication and digital identity stack, which will allow people access to services, do KYC, manage consent. So we built solutions which were purely targeting the digital access space. And this started including credentials in the digital format, which is where our journey with verifiable credentials began. And then we extended this to as we started working with this, we extended this usage from online to offline usage by promoting digital wallets. And building these digital wallets, we recognize that these digital wallets are not going to be just for the ID credentials that we are building, but for other credentials also. And that's where we have been combining the digital identity and the wallet together and focusing on not just this, but all kinds of credentialing. So we have started some work on the credentialing area also. While these were all infrastructure that we were building to help countries start issuing IDs, offering digital services on top of that, and so on, we wanted to have a powerful demonstrator of how this ID can be used. So we started working on an open G2P platform, which basically helps with benefits delivery for government-to-people programs. And this actually uses the ID that is issued using these platforms. It's well integrated as a demonstrator. And this is something that we have been able to actually showcase as well as deploy. Incidentally, this module works with MOSIP-based systems as well as existing ID systems that they may already have. So it's not opinionated to just MOSIP solutions. And going beyond the foundational ID, there are lots of systems which are looking at sectoral IDs, for example, health ID or student ID and so on. And using the same set of principles that we have been building other solutions, we have started some work on leveraging the registries for sectoral IDs also. And this is all possible because of our approach. We have been always thinking of modularity in the way we build our solutions and also very responsible development by way of promoting reuse of existing open source tools as well as our own components that we are building. So these solutions, they all share lots of the components and they can all be used independent of each other. In most cases, for example, the digital wallet that we have can work with our issuance services, or it can also work with other issuers. So nothing is tied or locked in into the whole stack or whole solution landscape that we offer. People can pick and choose the solutions that they want to use, or they can actually also work with this whole suite. This is a quick overview of what we have in the ID issuance platform. We have two parts. One is something that supports the ID issuance and lifecycle management, which includes self-service pre-registration and online or offline mode of registration. This is a activity that requires contact if biometrics are collected. If there is no biometrics involved, this can be totally offline and remote. Once the ID is issued, we then get to the second part of the story, which requires usage of the ID. So we have an authentication service, and then we have resident services, which allow users to manage their ID credentials. And then we have a partner management module, which allows the ID system to manage who gets access to the authentication APIs, what kind of KYC policies they are enabled to, so that data sharing can be strictly on a need-to-know basis and regulated. And our entire development has been led by what we call as a principle-led development approach. So privacy, security, open standards. These are all some of the things that we try to make sure we use or incorporate in at every step of the work. So we have several privacy features, extensibility features, the ability to customize, configure, localize these solutions. So multi-language support is a great example of how this can actually be used in different country contexts. For example, in Morocco, it is used with French and Arabic, while Ethiopia uses Amharic and English, Philippines uses English, and so on. So there are choices that people can make, and the system can be configured or extended to meet specific requirements. Once we go beyond the ID issue and lifecycle management, we had to cater to a variety of requirements. Some countries opt for initial infrastructure, which is basically online and centrally used for authentication. There are other cases where there is a need for a combination of centralized as well as decentralized use of identity verification. And in more advanced cases where people don't want a centralized verification at all, pure offline usage or decentralized usage of ID verification is needed. So we have a bouquet of modules and services that caters to all these kind of needs. The online verification services, the underlying core support for any kind of channel actually lies in the API that we offer. This API has two flavors. One is a simple yes-no API, which given the identifier of the user and the authentication factors, comes back with a yes or no response as to whether it's the same, whether it's the right user. The second flavor is a KYC endpoint, which takes similar inputs, except that this shares authorized KYC results. So it's possible through policy to control what gets shared to which relying party using this KYC endpoint. We have support for anonymous identifiers and tokens in this so that people don't have to share their permanent ID numbers to the relying parties. So short-lived ID tokens can be used. And anywhere where biometrics are used for as authentication factors, we have a support where the biometrics get encrypted on the capture device itself and then get sent to the server where only the authentication server can decrypt the biometrics for any comparison. This prevents building local databases of biometrics or reuse of those biometrics in other places. Where biometrics are not used, we have other authentication factors like one-time passwords and PINs and so on. And we also have the ability to extend authentication factors using protocols like WebAuth and to support additional methods for additional factors for authentication. On top of this, we have actually built an OpenID Connect-based solution, which allows people to simplify the integration to this API. The API is routed using an ID provider, and this ID provider is a plugin into the eSignet solution that we have. eSignet can be plugged in, or the plugin can be developed in eSignet for not just MOSIP, but for other systems also. In fact, we have done something of that sort exactly in Cambodia, where Cambodia's existing ID system is the one that's fronted by eSignet, and the IDP there talks to their systems. So what eSignet offers is the ability to use the government-issued ID for login and authentication, and login basically starts giving you access to various systems without having to create too many credentials, username, passwords everywhere. And since this service is run by authorized people, you'll be getting a uniform experience across portals, and you will be sharing your authentication factors and data and even your ID number only in these set of authorized providers systems. So all kinds of relying parties don't get access to it. They only get access to token that is returned to them and any kind of consented attributes that are shared as part of the OpenID Connect process. We also have started incorporating support for our offline usage or offline authentication in eSignet by way of being able to hand over the authentication completion to the wallet. So let's say a relying party wants the user to sign in, they redirect them to eSignet, and they can either complete the authentication on eSignet or they can actually take over from their wallet, complete it on the wallet, and eSignet then redirects them back to the relying parties portal after the authentication is completed.
Thank you. Is it all right if Manu jumps in with a question at this point?
Sure. Yeah.
Great. Manu?
Hi, Ramesh. This has been fantastic so far. I have a question though on eSignet. It sounds like a centralized solution. So I'm trying to understand. It sounds like eSignet everything would route through eSignet, and I get the benefit of not exposing all the other relying parties to the information that might go through eSignet, but you know, I'm trying to square that with the decentralized, you know, message that you started off with. So who runs eSignet? Like, is it like login.gov in the United States where all logins to federal systems go through login.gov? So you have to have a login.gov account. How I'm trying to understand the centralization characteristics of the eSignet.
Yeah, excellent question, Manu. It is an online solution, and the way you deploy it can actually be the choice of who is deploying it. And if there is one single system, obviously it becomes centralized. But it's also possible for us to actually support multiple underlying ID providers, like how it is in France. The France Connect solution, for example, talks to various underlying parties, right? So eSignet does not have any persistence layer other than the user consent. It doesn't store any user information or ID or anything of that sort. And what it basically means is that if the underlying IDs are many, then based on which ID is used, the authentication services of that particular system are used. So that system would know. So it's centralized to that extent, but essentially it can act in a federation mode or in a centralized mode. But if you're handing it over to the wallet, right, then the authentication happens against a credential which is there in the wallet, in which case you're not hitting the centralized systems. You're hitting the user's wallet. So this is where the support for decentralized usage comes in the eSignet portion. But it is essentially an online centralized system run by some particular provider. I hope that answers your question.
It did. Thank you.
So as Manu indicated, this is not a solution that entirely moves us to decentralization, but we wanted to make sure that this has a path to decentralized usage also, where this becomes actually, eSignet becomes a way to integrate with the wallet and complete the authentication on the wallet. So that's one pathway to decentralization, which is supported in eSignet. When it comes to a wallet, we built this wallet NG. A normal digital wallet would mostly be used as a store for credentials, and it would be a protected wallet. Maybe there's a way to unlock it and so on. But in our case, we have taken the wallet and added an additional feature by adding an authenticator in it. What we do is we MOSIP the issuance software. It generates verifiable credentials by default for ID credentials. These can then be downloaded onto the wallet using issuance software. We had started off with a custom integration and retrieval mechanism using our API originally, but then once we had OpenID for VC issuance protocol, once it was created, we actually have implemented that. I think we are right now supporting implementers draft 11 is something that we are supporting. And so we can download the credential onto the wallet using OpenID for VCI. And this credential is the way that OpenID for VC is done is through eSignet. So there is an authentication of the user and then they download their credential. So we bind the wallet to the user's ID credential, which means subsequently when you want to do authentication, we can actually do authentication against the credential which is there in the wallet. And we support a face authentication offline for actually doing the presence verification and a biometric binding of the user to the credential as well as for the authentication itself. So these are, this is the authentication capability that is supported in our wallet. From a pure credentials perspective, apart from the store, we have the ability to share the credentials either through QR code, if it's a very small credential that can be fitted into one. Else we have a Bluetooth low energy based peer-to-peer sharing support that we have built. This uses OpenID for VP over BLE as the protocol. And as I mentioned, it has eSignet integration, one for download of the credential and second for the handover of authentication from eSignet to the wallet. There are cases where the phones that are available in the market are not secure or they're not smartphones and they are not maybe capable of doing all that we are proposing here. So for these cases, we are looking at building a cloud wallet. The cloud wallet will be a completely encrypted cloud store, which really the user can decrypt by operating it through a shell app or through USSD, these mechanisms. So we are looking at various cryptographic means where the key for decrypting and all actually can be generated on the fly by the user, maybe using SIM toolkits that can leverage the capabilities of the SIM card on their phone. So these are mechanisms that we are looking at to see how we can have a hosted wallet, a cloud wallet, where again, their privacy, data privacy is protected. So this is on the wallet side. As I was mentioning, we combined all of this and we are working on a digital credentialing stack. So this triangle is something that you will all be familiar with. So I won't go deep into it. We have added issuance capabilities into eSignet, and the holder basically is the NG wallet, but we can support other wallets also because the issuance protocols that we are supporting are open. And sharing with the relying party, as I mentioned, we have QR as well as BLE-based shares. And we are looking at adding support for other protocols also, like the MDoc sharing capabilities. And the relying party can trust the issuer. We have set up some trust mechanism using DIDWeb and well-known specs. And we again rely on OpenID for VCI associated specifications for these. The advantages of this are many. We have integrated with OpenCRVS, for example, for issuance of birth certificates as digital credentials. Similarly, we are issuing, we are working with a couple of countries, Bangladesh being one, for issue of trade licenses or business incorporation certificates using this. So the issuance model right now supports VC 1.1 spec credentials, but we are having a modular approach where we can actually start adding other credential formats also. And as Manu mentioned, we were waiting for the 2.0 to become an official spec for us to actually start some work on that. And I think it looks like it's going to be in our plans too. So we have plenty of integration models, APIs, stages that can be plugged into workflow, event-based integration mechanisms, data sharing with a lot of cryptographic protections built into it. So with this, we have integrated with benefits delivery systems, civil registries, digital signatures, healthcare systems, and so on. Many of these are open source solutions, which can also be used in case somebody wants to adopt those solutions. Wherever possible, we work with standards. Wherever these standards don't meet, we try to work with various industry initiatives and groups to bring in our inputs. And if we see that they are already working along those lines, if there are some emerging drafts, we pick those up and work. And where we have not been able to see anybody taking any steps, we try to actually work with some groups like GovStack or G2P Connect and so on, in order to define some specifications, which can then maybe over time get into standards process. We have one initiative in IEEE for working for secure biometrics devices. So this is the one that deals with encrypting the biometrics captured on the device in the field itself in order to provide high level of security for biometric authentication. So all this is to basically work towards our core objective of creating interoperable systems which are for everyone, have a bouquet of solutions which address everyone, and then to create trust in the identity so that that trust is what drives the usage and the transactions that that are an essential part of the digital life that we are all looking forward to very much. That's my presentation, but I think I took more than the 20 minutes I mentioned. I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you so much. That was actually really informative, and I'm glad you took the time to go through it all. Manu, I believe you're first on the queue.
Yes. Thank you for that, Ramesh. Your work in this space and the folks on the MOSIP team, it's very inspiring. It's wonderful work. And so I'm wondering, what do you feel? You mentioned the gaps in the standards. What do you feel was kind of the biggest challenge for adoption that you faced? I'm looking at, the way that you've built this system out. It feels like, you almost had to start as an identity provider for kind of central government institutions and then build the services out from there. Like it was very, did you try other approaches where it was very difficult to kind of start as a digital wallet provider and then try to provide services? It almost feels like for the MOSIP platform, or really any platform to get a hold inside, a digital identity, you have to have the government understand that they want that solution. And then you have to kind of work through kind of core services in government. So do you see any other approaches? Was that the approach that you had? What were the kind of the biggest challenges to scale to the level that you've been able to scale to today?
Yeah, I think challenges have been plenty. The way you put it across is exactly how it happened. We had to start with addressing the most fundamental need, which was basically fill the gap where people did not have an ID at all. And participation in any kind of transaction, even if it's a physical paper-based transaction, was not possible if a person did not have an ID. Right? Access to education, access to healthcare, access to financial services, a lot of it was a problem. I can quote examples where people were not able to get birth certificates issued for their children because the parents did not have documents. And then if they don't, children don't have birth certificates, they can't get into a vaccination or immunization schedule. They can't get into schools. So maybe a lot of it is to do with the policy and how basic services are available, but the process of using ID documents to ensure that citizens get benefits as opposed to all kinds of people who are coming and getting benefits was a problem because a lot of these services were subsidized. So it was important to ensure that people got IDs first. So that's where we started. But we also knew that even as we started, we were very aware of concerns around privacy of users, risks of surveillance, how centralized systems are looked at. Somewhere people like them, somewhere people frown upon them. We know that we are getting into a world where we need multiple solutions and multiple pathways. So we were always ready to evolve into something more than just a centralized system. But a government-issued ID was what would bring trust in the ID in the first place. So this is the real ID or the foundational ID that we started. Then we wanted to provide mechanisms, friendly mechanisms on top of it for ID usage. So we started building features there. And then subsequently, we started, once the wallet-related standards and specifications started emerging better, we knew that we will not be building something which we'll be throwing away. So we started working with the draft specifications and started working on that aspect. So the TOIP was one of our big inspirations that when we saw the framework, we decided that instead of building just some data and issuing some ID, we'll make sure that we are natively supporting credentials right from the outset. So we started incorporating VC even before it became a full accepted spec into our product.
Thank you. Harrison, you're on the queue.
Yes. Ramesh, do you mind kind of clarify who are the implementers? Because earlier you mentioned that there's Bangladesh government and I'm guessing Indian governments. So, like, is it just the governments or are there other like businesses or other entities that implemented this?
Actually, governments are the adopters. The implementations have been sometimes carried out by government departments themselves. And in other cases, they have worked with ecosystems partners and systems integrators to actually roll out these solutions. Our mandate at MOSIP from a funding perspective has been primarily to help governments. But we have cases where a university has actually picked this up for their student ID and they're doing it on their own. This is in Argentina. And we have somebody actually building sectoral IDs in India for healthcare using some of our solutions. So yes, we expect it to be used beyond government systems.
Harrison, did you have another question?
Yes, so separate questions. First of all, it's quite impressive that MOSIP actually tackles multiple aspects and facets of identity from issuance, right, wallets, and so on and so on. So my question is, like, what is the toughest challenge, right? What's the toughest problem? Like when you modularize the identity problems, like for example, earlier you talked about authentications, biometric, like keeping it secure, private, and things like that. Like which part, when you're working on different parts and different modules, for lack of a better term, which module is the hardest?
Rather than module, I would say the aspect that we find it the hardest is actually inclusion. The diversity of the population is such that there are challenges in terms of infrastructure. There are challenges in terms of digital savvy, as well as many other factors, right? So cost, lots of factors are there. So we had to make sure that we had to have a bouquet of solutions and not just one. So that I think was one of the biggest challenges that we had.
Great, thank you. Adrian?
In the example, you mentioned India's sector role in healthcare in particular. What's the relationship that you have with Aadhaar as the national ID for things like that?
Yeah, so Aadhaar is built by the UIDAI and run for India's national ID program. So we don't have anything to do with that, right? That's a totally independent system. So MOSIP is incidentally built in India, but it's a totally new system built from scratch. The healthcare system might use the underlying Aadhaar for verification against the foundational ID, but what MOSIP is used for is building the sectoral identity for the same person.
Ramesh, if I can ask you a query based on the Aadhaar discussion that you are having. So the verification is done even for the PAN card, since Aadhaar card has certain requirements, or is it only there is no identification or verification needed for that, since you work with the governments and they are scaling it?
So we don't work with the Indian government actually, so I can't answer to that this particular thing. I think there are, as is the case in most places, for different processes people can produce one of many IDs.
Yeah,
so it could be the tax number, or it could be the national ID, and so on, right? So I think those are processes covered by respective applications. So even if somebody is using the national ID in cases where they have deployed MOSIP, MOSIP offers the solutions for quick verification, easy verification in online, offline contexts.
Right, that's the main reason I asked you, because the eKYC is in feature right now at every payment gateway, right? I mean, international transaction verifications, dates, credentials, all of it. So I just wanted to know if you are directly working with the government, or it's just in the peripheral collaboration that you're talking about. Yeah, thank you.
All right, Manu, you're next up on the queue.
Right. So this question has more to do with the standards work. So you mentioned a set of standards that are missing now around trust frameworks and biometrics and things of that nature. And so, you know, since many of us here work in standards setting organizations, global standard setting organizations, I'm curious what kind of work we can focus on next that would be most helpful to you. Understanding that there are limitations, like W3C doesn't work on biometric anything, right? The position is kind of the opposite. They're kind of, I think, anti-biometrics. They focus more on web authn and types of authentication that's cryptographic and unlinkable and stuff like that. So, you know, there's certain things where we can't really help around, I think, the biometric portion of it, but there are other places where I think we could help. You mentioned QR codes in squeezing verifiable credentials down into small areas. We do have work on, you know, taking a verifiable credential and compressing it using CBOR LD so that you can express it in a QR code with a digital signature in that sort of thing. Very important for offline scenarios. We are also, you know, have a work item in this group around trust frameworks, effectively the, you know, the authorized verifiers issuers, you know, list work that is going on. What's the biggest pain point for you? Like if there was a new standard that we could work on in the next, you know, year or so and get done, what would be the highest priority standard we could work on?
Yeah, actually, the CBOR LD that you mentioned, right? We needed it 2 years ago when people were issuing cards with QR codes embedded in them. So we had to build a CWT-based approach where we had to make certain assumptions about the envelope as well as the content in order to make sure that it fits and is usable. Cryptographically verifiable and still interpretable. So we'll be happy to look at how CBOR LD has been used actually to support this. So we felt that the VC envelope itself was very big. A lot of work on the metadata area was very rapidly changing and moving. I think that's one area where we would like clarity more than anything else. Specifically on standards, I will get back. We have a laundry list at what would take the cake, what would be high priority, something that we can probably revert back to. There are a few pain points that we have, and we'll be actually very glad to talk about those. Talk about those pain points. While VC does not address schemas, there is also a need to agree upon some common schemas for simplifying interpretation of the data, especially for cross-border usage. So cross-border usage related cases change the trust as well as the content related requirements. It puts additional expectations on that. I think those are areas that are beginning to emerge. We are working with the West African region for where they want a regionally interoperable ID. So to be able to address that, we will need specifications for that. Another area where we are facing challenges, there's some amount of divergence between what verifiable credentials does as work and MDL does as work, ISO. MDocs set of standards, and it's if there's some possible way to reduce the deviations and arrive at some common set of specifications which support different kinds of credential types. For example, in India, there's been signed XML that has been issued for ages, and this was even before anybody was imagining credentials as for standards related work, right? So, and that also needs to be supported. So there are many cases where we would need different types of credentials formats to be supported. And I think we'll need to have for interoperability common frameworks. And it can't be in isolation, imagined different ways in different continents.
Thank you. Dimitri, I'm going to let you have the last question of the day.
Oh, sure thing. Thank you. Thanks, Ramesh. Really enjoyed your presentation. What specification do you use for trust registries, for lists of known issuers and verifiers? And is that something most of would be interested in collaborating on?
We would be. Right now, for the wallet, we have a wallet server, and the wallet server is the one that feeds the trust registry or gives access to the wallet. So we have kept it simple till we get good clarity on being able to refer to some common infrastructure. For discovery, we are using for a given issuer, a discovery of other things, we are using well-known specs. So that's our current simplified approach. We are open to anything from a simple GitHub repository onwards till a registry which is publicly acknowledged or acceptable to everyone.
Great. Thank you again so much for being here and sharing this with us. It was really interesting and very applicable to my own work. So I'm excited. Thank you. And thank you everyone for participating today. And we will see you next Tuesday at the same time. Thank you all.
Thank you for the opportunity. Bye.